Good morning to you, Stephen.
Hi, Deborah.
Well, we need the latest update on the Opus Prime, and now, of course, Lyft Capital.
Yes, and another firm in Melbourne, Shamira Capital, is also increasingly being speculated about having an identical model. So there's complete contagion in the margin lending space, particularly the model where the shares are owned by the lender. And it really is breaking out on all sorts of fronts at the moment. ANZ suffering its greatest reputational hit in a couple of decades, and yesterday has, I guess, almost the ultimate ignominy, has called in a former Westpac director to lead a review of its whole margin lending and securities lending business. So ANZ in complete damage control, and probably almost in just as much damage control as the ASX itself, which is facing increasing calls for it to lose its regulatory role. And some revelations, particularly in the Financial Review yesterday, of amazing detail about how Opus Prime was subjected to its regular three-yearly audit by the ASX late last year. It had meetings with ASIC, which sort of gave it the all clear and didn't demand it show documents. And it even claims that the ASX encouraged it to move $1 billion of debt off balance sheet so that it wouldn't be in breach of its liquidity ratio. So that the picture coming across is of very slack and lax regulators who almost appear to be compliant and complicit with the staggering on and the covering up of Opus Prime's fundamental weaknesses.
Well, and, I know, but Stephen, isn't the interesting question partly that you're not looking at, fledgling investors here? These people are kind of in love with risk. How does the ASX let people have their flirtation with risk and possible great gains at the same time as they protect people against what, you know, looks like too much risk?
Well, I guess the ASX's role is, this is where the ASX is conflicted, because they clip the ticket on every transaction. So they literally lower the bar so that, as many different types of securities can be traded, and maximum short selling and all those types of incentives they have because they're a for-profit monopoly. But then they've got this simultaneous role of ensuring the reputation and the integrity of the markets. And that goes often to the solvency of stockbrokers themselves. Now, at one level, the ASX isn't really responsible for the way Opus Prime decides to lend against dodgy stocks and decides to have customers who take massive risks, like, say, a Chris Murphy, who traded $4 billion worth of Telstra shares over a couple of years' period. The ASX's role is to make sure that Opus Prime is solvent and meets its regulatory requirements and the ratios that they have. And from the ASIC's point of view, it's that it's in compliance with its licence. And that's where clearly they weren't on a range of levels yet for a number of weeks there. Both ASIC and the ASX allowed Opus to trade on and seemingly was complicit in shuffling of the deck chairs, which allowed them to stagger on for even longer. So my prediction at this point, Deborah, is that the ASX will be sued in these class actions by the outraged Opus Prime creditors, who are looking at losing $300 to $400 million and only receiving 30 cents in the dollar. And the argument will be that ASX was lax and should have pulled their license and shut them down a whole lot earlier. And they didn't. And you've even got the former head of surveillance at the ASX, a guy called Jim Berry, who set up the surveillance division and ran the thing for 16 years until 2004. He's in the press today slamming his former bosses and ASIC for being slack and under-resourced and conflicted and these things. So it really is breaking out on a number of fronts at the moment.
Well, let's turn our attention again to the ANZ Bank. Its reputation, obviously, with most of us, is as a responsible holder of our mortgages and our savings accounts, our investments, whatever it might be. Do they suffer so much that people might find another bank?
Well, that's always been the argument, that people get ripped off by the bank oligopoly in Australia and they'll change banks. But the problem is that Australian customers, banking customers, are very entangled with their banks and don't move very much. And so that's what's been the key to the success of the banking cartel, is that they've been able to jack up their fees and the customers have complained but never left. So I don't think you'll see a flood of people take their business away from the ANZ, particularly at a retail level. But I do think that they're going to suffer damage institutionally in the corporate space, particularly in WA, where there's a growing outrage amongst the mining entrepreneurs over there. And I just think that the whole risk management reputation is pretty much in tatters. And you saw the CEO, Mike Smith. I mean, this Mike Smith is a British banker who did a good job running risk management across HSBC's Asian businesses. HSBC is one of the most profitable banks in the world. He came down here six months ago to take over the running of the bank, and he's just been embroiled in this crisis. And it literally was damage control yesterday. I mean, it's not often you hear bank CEOs doing interviews on PM, subjecting themselves to cross-examinations with journalists on the internet, which is what he did yesterday, and announcing reviews where he brings in Australia's most famous insolvency expert, David Crawford, who was there cleaning up the mess with Alan Bond and John Spalvins and Christopher Skase 15 years ago. And has just retired from the Westpac board, and to bring him in to do an independent review is pretty embarrassing, but also pretty serious. And they are going to wash their dirty linen in public here, and we're going to see the entrails of what happened with Opus, which will be fascinating to watch.
So you reckon they'll publish what he finds?
Well, he has said quite openly that we're going to air our dirty linen here. The Crawford report will be made public. Already, four ANZ executives are on gardening leave because they had things like, whilst they were lending hundreds of millions to Opus, the executives involved had their own margin lending accounts with Opus, and one of them, the operations director, attempted to get his cash out on the day the thing went under. So huge breaches of conflict of interest, codes of conduct provisions within ANZ, and the risk they suffer here is that their ability to be a straight-talking bank which just simply grabbed its security in a normal banking process looks like it's been fundamentally flawed, because not only did the CEO of Opus come out of ANZ, still has his mortgage with ANZ, but it seems few of the executives dealing with Opus and the loans, who weren't picking up the irregularities, had their own margin loans and were doing their own irregularities, i.e. trying to get out before the door slammed behind them. So it's a real mess for ANZ, and I suspect here they'll end up, at this point I'd say they'll end up making a contribution of in excess of $100 million to some sort of final settlement with the Opus Prime customers. So I don't think Opus Prime people will only get 30 cents on the dollar. Between the ASX, the auditors, directors, and particularly the ANZ, I think they'll be pretty confident of making some recoveries. It might take a bit of litigation, but I don't think 30 cents on the dollar will be where they finish.
Now, with us is Stephen Mayne. He's not on gardening leave. He's watching very closely what these guys are up to. Now, Stephen, I was very interested to see that Victoria had overturned this duopoly between Tats and Tabcorp, the pokie deal. It's amazing.
Well, I think never before that I can recall in the last 20 years have we seen one government decision destroy so much shareholder value. And when the Victorian government came out last week and said Tattersalls and Tabcorp, which at the time were worth more than $12 billion in market valuation, I mean, Tabcorp, of course, owns the Star City Casino, and the New South Wales TAB, so they have a big business in New South Wales. But the most lucrative business for both Tattersalls and Tabcorp has been their 20-year licences to operate poker machines in Victoria as a duopoly. So the way the system works in Victoria is they dish out the machines to the venues, the pubs and clubs, and they gather up 33% of the losses. So, you know, punters lost $2.5 billion last year. Tats and Tabcorp take about $850 million of that. Very lucrative business. But the government came out last week and said, not only are we going to not renew their licences in 2012, we're going to go to a New South Wales and Queensland model, which is where the venues control them themselves, but we're not going to pay them $1.2 billion of legislated compensation, which was revealed in prospectuses, involved in government contracts, laid out in legislation. It was, you know, as clear as the nose on your face that there was a $1 billion plus of compensation payable if this happened. And for the government to rip those contracts up and say, get stuff, we're not giving you a cent, nor are we giving you a licence, was very, very dramatic in terms of regulated business and the share market, and $3.3 billion or 25% wiped out in two trading days. And a lot of people saying don't want to do business with the Victorian government anymore because you can't trust them.
Well, You've discovered, I mean, I didn't know that Woolworths had an interest in punting.
Oh, look, it's amazing when you look at the scale of it. I remember chatting to a couple of Woolworths directors after the AGM at Darling Harbour last November, and they said, oh, look, you know, we had to get into pokies because, you know, in Queensland, you can't run bottle shops unless you own the hotels. So we had to buy a few hotels there, and that led us into the poker machine business. But you wouldn't believe the scale of their business. I mean, they have close to 12,000 poker machines now across the country, and they have 5,000 in Victoria. And they have 40% of all poker machines in Victorian pubs. And Victorians lost about $600 million last year playing Woolworths poker machines. So it is bizarre that, I mean, I guess gambling is such an ingrained part of the Australian culture. I mean, you know, for a long time there was a casino. Dick Warburton, the chairman of Star City Casino, was on the Reserve Bank board. And I remember, you know, other countries used to say, what sort of a country has a casino chairman on their central bank? And in the case of Tabcorp, John Storey is the chairman of Tabcorp. He's the president of the Institute of Company Directors. So it is very much ingrained in the Australian way, in the Australian corporate way. We lose more per head than any other country in the world gambling. So I guess at that level, it's not surprising that our biggest retailer also has a poker machine business where punters lose close to $1 billion a year playing their poker machines. And I think Woolies will suffer a bit the pressure of responsible gaming campaigners and the like going forward, because it is just a huge business, and it's an odd thing for a company you associate with Dick Smith Electronics and supermarket shopping and the like is putting so much misery on so many citizens, taking $1 billion off them in poker machine losses each year.
Good on you, Stephen. Thanks very much for joining me this morning.
Thanks, Deb.
Stephen Mayne there, who's the founder, rather, of Crikey.com.au.